Welcome to episode 155 of the Martin Bailey Photography Podcast. Okay, so today I'm going to be doing another one of those kind of ad lib podcasts. Things have been a bit crazy for me lately, and although I had time to look through some photographs from a recent shoot and upload them at the weekend, I just haven't had time to put together a transcript as I usually do, so I'm just going to sort of jump right into this today and speak ad lib and just look through the photographs with you. So let's jump right into it. Okay, so to give you a little bit of background before we start, you may remember a few episodes ago we looked at a number of shots that I did on a professional assignment way up north in the town of Jawbawdee, where we looked at the images that I'd shot of a lacquer wear or a lacquer tree scratching guy, and that basically was for a book that's being created by a client. And it's one of those specialist books, so I'll probably never be able to sort of show you the book itself, although I will get some tear sheets. But the deadline for the completion of the book is coming along pretty soon, and the art designer, or the art director, I should say, of the book has been panicking a little bit, trying to get the rights to use a certain type of picture. Or a certain picture. And what they did was, as kind of an insurance, was they hired me to go off and take a bunch of similar, not the same, but similar photographs in the same vein. And it turns out that they've got the rights to use some of the others, but they're also going to use some of mine as well now. I want them to use as many as mine as possible, but you know, this is the nature of the game. They are still going to use some, and I'm obviously still going to get paid for the shoot, so I don't mind either way, really. But there's a bit of pride in there as well, so I'd prefer them to use as many as mine as possible. But what this did was it put some pretty strong restrictions onto the shoot, and we'll see this as we unfold. And I'm hoping that I can remember all of the details as we look at these. As I say, I'm doing this ad lib today. But one of the major constraints was that they wanted the background to be black, but they wanted it to be a warm black. I will go into the details of how I warmed it up a little bit later. You know, you'd think of black as being black, but you know, there are ways to sort of to make that light a little bit warmer, and this is one of the things that I did. Again, I was using studio lighting for this. We turned off the fluorescent tube lights in the workshop of the place that I visited. Basically that means that I had control over all of the light. But the setup took a little bit of getting right. And then I'd taken a few things with me to try and warm up the light in a certain way. And I'll get into details of that later. But still, you know, I was trying to get an overall dark feeling, but the subjects themselves had to be obviously bright and warm. So let's take a look at the first image, which is number 1897. We'll look at these in the order that I shot them. The following four images will actually show some of the craft, which I'll talk about a little bit more soon as well. But one of the first things I did while I was waiting for the craftsman that I was going to shoot to sort of finish up the other work that he had to do, because I was actually shooting in their office, which doubles as a workshop. And, you know, while I was waiting for that, I just started to do one of the other things, which was to get some still lifes of the tools or the lacquer and the stuff that they used to do the art. So here we can see two pots of the lacquer, one yellow and one orange. And what happens is this place is like one of the centers of the Macquier art. And Macquier is basically like a sprinkling painting. And you'll see why in the next few images. But what happens is people who either die and leave their equipment and their leftover paints and things to this place, obviously they're all kept here, or people just just give them things. And so it's a bit of a treasure chest. They've got like boxes and boxes of these wonderful sort of paints and things. Paints, they're lacquers, sorry. So what we can see here is two drawers. I've basically just grabbed one drawer and put it in the foreground, taken the yellow and the orangey-red pot out and put them into the right of that, and then stood another drawer up in the background to make a nice colourful backdrop. I didn't play with these things too much. Actually, if you look at this, you can see that there's dust on top of some of the pots. I didn't clean them up. I pretty much did use them as they are. The background that we can see there is a background that I had to go and pick up on the night before the shoot. This was all arranged very quickly, and so I had to literally go and pick up some of the things, the extra tools that I was going to need on the day before. What I'm going to do, you'll probably hear me scrolling and clicking around, because I'm going to tell you the sort of lenses that I use and the settings as I usually did, but it's going to mean me looking at the EXIF data in the online gallery to do so. So for this, I shot this with the 24-70mm f2.8 lens. I used an aperture of f4 for 1/125th of a second with an ISO of 200. And basically, you know, that was pretty much what I needed for the depth of field. I didn't want the background to be in focus. I wanted to get it as shallow a focus as possible. I've focused on the little character. It means just reads yellow, but I've focused on that little character on the yellow pot. And so even the orange-red part, that's starting to go out of focus slightly. But this is really the look that I was after, shallow depth of field. The sort of photographs I like, as you know. But also this was one of the things that I'd got agreement that was necessary for the shoot as well. So, nice surroundings, nice requirements for me to work with. Basically, you know, this whole orangey sort of relatively warm look is what I was after as well. And, you know, without sort of going too much on this one, let's take a look at another photo. The next one is 1899. And here you can see for the first time the actual sort of act of doing the art. I asked the craftsman to use a small object. This is a lacquerware object made with, it's a little pot, but it's actually covered in the lacquer that we saw the old gentleman, Omori-san. He was taking that from the trees a few weeks ago. And then on that palette is actually like it's got a string on the bottom, and it's attached to his thumb so that they have it right near where they're going to be working. So we can see here that the artist or the craftsman is painting in the details, a pattern on the little pot thing, and we can also see there some telltale light, because you can what you can see reflecting in the pot is an orange reflector, and I will get to that a little bit later. Well, basically, again, very shallow depth of field. I focused on the tip of the brush so that we can see focus on the part where he's painting and the tips of his fingers of his left hand. But the foreground hand, his right hand, is pretty much out of focus there. And this is the look that we were looking for. So, it's I'm happy with that. The depth of field here, let's take a look at the here we go. So the aperture was 4.5 for this with an exposure of 1/60th of a second, again at ISO 200. I set the ISO to 200 with highlight priority on for the whole of the shoot, so I'm probably not going to go into that for each shot. But again, relatively shallow depth of field. And showing you the way they start to do this maquillage work, which is to paint in the outline of the pattern that they want to produce in the final work. And in the next image, we can see the next part of the process. The next image is number 1900. So here we can see the craftsman loading up like gold It's like glitter, a gold glitter type stuff. It's actually made of gold leaf. It's real gold. But what he's doing basically is putting it into this tube, and is going to use that tube to sprinkle it onto the paint that we just saw him applying to the pot. So we'll move on to that shortly. But this particular image was a real pain to get. We emptied the tube back out, and I actually succeeded twice, and I think it's another one, not this one, that's going to be used in the book, but if it gets used. I must have had him sprinkle this maybe 30 or 40 times, and each time I was like, okay, so 1, 2, 3, and then go. And he sprinkled the glitter from the end of that spatula into the tube, but each time, he can't control exactly when it drops. He can tilt the spatula very quickly and it all just goes. Or he can tilt it really slowly and it takes a few flakes drop off. And then, you know, it starts to go. But the timing is very, very difficult. And so I was checking each time. Not each time, because sometimes I knew I'd missed it. But we must have sort of retook this maybe 20 or 30 times, where we just kept counting 1, 2, 3, go. And twice I caught the glitter falling. And this is one of them. I didn't upload the other. I quite like this shot. What we've done is we've used the paper is what the gold comes in, and you buy it in little sachets. And then we have these two little metal like paperweights that they use to stop the paper from blowing around. It was midsummer here in Tokyo when we took this, but we had to turn off the air conditioning because it blew out into the area that we were working with, and that would make it would sort of blow the glitter around. And it's not cheap. It's not overly expensive, but it's not cheap either. So conditions were getting a little bit hot in there. But you know, the guy himself, his name was Maruyama-san, by the way. So Mr. Maruyama was being very patient with us. He's an accomplished Makie craftsman himself. And the requirements for this day were only to shoot his hands, but I got another candid shot of him that we'll look at later as well. So settings, let me just take a look. So for this one, the aperture is f5.6 for 1/160th of a second again. And you know, this one, the hands were pretty far away. I've made a slightly wider depth of field, but not going very wide. And I was actually using the 100mm f2.8 macro lens for this, so that I could get in close as well. So because of the closeness, I was thinking that I need a little bit of depth of field. Probably not much closer than I was with the other, with the 24-70mm. We've still got roughly the same sort of size of the hands, but you know, I just playing around with that a little bit to make sure that I got everything. And also, you know, plenty of that paper with the paperweights in there as well. So the next image, number 1901. Here we can see what's happening with the other end of that tube that we just saw Mr. Maruyama putting the gold glitter into. So, you know, that the thing that he's holding is the pot that he was painting onto earlier. And now he's just sort of tapping that tube and the sprinkling out the gold onto the pot, onto the areas that he'd just painted earlier. This again, you know, we've got lots of, you know, the background there, you know, nice and dark. This is just how we wanted it. One of the things that we had to do for this was, although we'll see later, he wasn't wearing a kimono. He actually had to be looked like he was wearing a black kimono, which is something, it's, you know, like I said, one of the requirements for the shoot. So we'd actually made these things and just sort of, we'd safety pinned two like long tubes of black cloth to his arms, to his denim shirt. So it was a little bit of a mock-up here. But this was what allowed us to, so that, you know, we can see that his left hand there is coming out of a very dark area, and that is the black mock-up kimono part of the prop. Again, I've gone in very, very closely here. The tip of the tube with the glitter coming out is slightly out of focus. I was focusing on the what I was thinking was the most important part of the pot, and so it's slightly out, but it still works. And and you can see the glitter fall in there. And also you can see it starting to drop off this side of the pot as well. So overall, I think it's a relatively successful shot. I've just gone backwards. let me just go down and check the. So again here, f5.6. Ended up with a setting the shutter speed to 125th of a second here. And I was back to using the 24 to 70 millimeter f2.8 lens as well. Let's quickly move on to the next shot, and we'll see here the next part of the process. So this is image number 1902. Here we can see basically Maruyama-san, he's got this very soft brush and brushing off the glitter. So it's basically now leaving the image, the outline of the flowers that he'd put on there, and he's just basically brushing it off. Here again, I've not focused on the brush, rather I've focused on the edge of the pot so that we can see the glitter falling. But also that gives, we're right at the place where we can see a lot of detail in the pot as well. This is kind of the way I was hoping this would turn out. Also, obviously, now I've positioned the hand at the top, so this gives the glitter somewhere to fall, and it also allows us to see like this purpley coloured tray that he had underneath, and that's basically catching the glitter. Obviously, they'll scoop up the good glitter and use that again, but it's it kind of works in general, I think, with the hand at the very top. Again, very close, tight crop. This is pretty much as shot. I don't think I've cropped this one. I cropped a couple, but this is pretty much as shot, and according to the requirements for the shoot. And here, back to the 100mm macro. As you can tell, I was switching out lenses a lot, just trying to get in close and then moving back out again. The 24 to 70 millimeter f2.8 lens actually has a very close closest focus and distance, so I could use that for a lot of them, but sometimes it just gave me the 100 millimeter gave me an extra 30 millimeter focal length, obviously, and gave me a little bit of space, so that I could move a little bit further away and still get a good crop. With this f4.5 at 125th of a second. And so that really shows you the process. They actually do some of the stuff where they'll then apply, I believe, a lacquer coat above to seal all of this in, and then they use like a very high quality charcoal to buffer it up or burnish it. I got photos of him burnishing, but it wasn't this object. It was a square lacquered sort of plaque. And I personally really don't like those photos, so I've not uploaded them here. And I don't think they're going to get used in the book either. We were trying to make do with what we had, and we just didn't have anything else similar to this pot. Not going to go into details of that, but this is basically four photos to explain the process. So it's a beautiful art. I've seen this sort of work. You may have seen jewelry or trays, lacquerware, and not jewelry, sorry, jewelry boxes, or trays, and that are done with lacquerware, and they'll quite often have beautiful paintings embedded in them. They can use various types of material to make it up, maybe mother of pearl and stuff like that. But often the gold is in there as well, and it's applied pretty much in this way. If it's a relatively cheap piece of lacquerware, it may well just be a print that they've embedded under there. But if it's a relatively good one, a good quality one, it's more than likely going to be some high quality maquillé art. So, I feel very humbled and privileged to be able to work in, to be working so close to these traditional Japanese craftsmen over these last few assignments. So it's, you know, it's great for me. I think that I'm probably going places and seeing things and meeting people that very few people in Japan get a chance to do. So, you know, I feel very privileged for that. And once again, you know, the gentleman, Maruyama-san, he was just a gem. And what I want to do now is go on to the next photo that I took and take a look at him. The next one is 1904. So here we actually get a bit of an insight into the person and the set. So I'll talk a little bit about this one. So the gentleman sitting down there with the denim shirt is Maruyama-san, or Mr. Maruyama. And you can see that he's got, you can't really see them because it's dark. I actually shot this, I just stood back and shot it with the same settings that I was using for the, you know, with for the shooting under the lights that we can see set up there. So exposure's a little dark, but, you know, still I think that adds to the mood, and I'm sort of, it was kind of just a fun shot. But it means you can't actually see the black sleeves, but you can see where they are. We've got them pinned there with safety pins onto his denim shirt. And this is one of those sort of lighthearted moments. You know, he was just a really nice guy. And, you know, we were having a laugh, and we'd been messing around, you know, doing the shooting. And then he kind of prompted this photo. It was like, you know, he was holding his arms out and saying, you know, take a photo. So I'm not going to refuse. So I just sort of stood back. I took one to begin with the 100 millimeter macro. And then let me just check to tell you that so this one, the second one, I'd actually changed to the 24 millimeter, and I'd zoomed out to 32 millimeters. So you can tell I was relatively close. But really, you know, what this was, I just wanted to get this shot with everything in to show him in the surroundings. And also, we can see here what I did to warm up that black. If you take a look, you know, obviously the umbrella to the right that I'm using, I'm shooting into the umbrella without the black cover on. So I'm using that as like a direct light source, a big diffused light. And that's the main light source. That's four times brighter than the orange umbrella that we can see there. And that's really giving us the main light from my right. I was shooting from, if I was sitting down where I'd been sitting and shooting, Mary Emerson would be looking right at me here. So I was shooting from here with that light coming over my shoulder, my right shoulder. But we were lighting the background, and obviously the filling in some of the shadows with the orange colored umbrella that we can see there. And that was, like I say, so that's 1 to 4. I'd got the white umbrella at 4 and the, I guess that's how I should say it, 4 to 1. So the white umbrella was 4 times brighter, and the orange was 4 times dimmer. And the orange color there, if you look at the speed light that we have on the left, you know, shooting up into the left umbrella, you can see a piece of orange film. And this is basically just some amber filter. It's flash or strobe filter paper or plastic. It comes in a roll. And I knew I was going to have to warm the light up. So when I was in the camera store on the previous night buying the background, the black cloth that we can see draped it through the scene there, I picked up a roll of this amber plastic as well. Purely because, you know, I knew that I was going to have to warm the background up. But I didn't want to do this with white balance. You know, if I'd have, and again, I'm kind of thinking on my feet here. It's not one of those things that I've been studying up on. And the guy in the store was trying to tell me to just change the white balance. But if I had just changed the white balance, then the whole thing, you know, including the hands and the utensils and everything, all would have become much warmer. And I really didn't want that. I wanted them to be slightly warm, but I was trying to warm up the light, and the black being a more warm black rather than a cold or a neutral black. And so I just cut out a strip of this this plastic, the amber filter plastic, and I bent it across the top so that I got like a right angle, and I just taped it on the top there with some black photography tape that I have. And because I'd bent it, it then sort of, you know, it wanted to stay in that shape, but formed a really nice sort of seal along the edges, and just popping the light into that basically filled the large umbrella. It's a 60-inch umbrella with orange light. And as I set this up, sort of last minute, I didn't set things up the previous night. I literally got home, I think it was after 9 when I got back home, and I was pretty shattered. So I just sort of threw everything into the bag, starting to prepare for the next morning, and didn't set anything up to check. But spent a little bit of time setting up the whole studio thing when I got there, and I took a few test shots with a drawer of goodies, and on the black there, and I tried one without the orange, and I shot the Weibel then, and you know, my grey card, and I set the manual white balance on my camera to the, you know, to the grey card of the Weibel, and that basically then allowed me to to work with what was going to be the white light of the strobes, but then I dropped the orange plastic over the top, so I was not going to be white balance or white balance correcting that out. So I'd white balance to just plain clear white light, and then I used the orange filter, the amber filter there, and in the two test shots you could see that the whole thing had warmed up, including the black, and that was what I was really after. So I shot with this system, this whole thing. It didn't really change the settings at all. The camera was in manual mode, and the strobes were on auto ETTL. And so, you know, I had to do a little bit of compensation as the subject changes, but you know, it was really pretty much easy once I got it set up to just sort of keep my eye on things and change as necessary. So this is, the black background there, that's a photography backdrop. You can see that there's some creases in the foreground there. I'd basically taped it to this workbench, but I'd not, you know, I wasn't worrying too much about these creases that we got while we were, I was leaning on the table with my elbows and things. If they weren't in the shot, I wasn't too worried about it. But then every so often we had to keep sort of, you know, smoothing them back out with our hands. So let's see. One other thing that I wanted to mention is for this shoot, I knew that I was going to be working in relatively tight surroundings. So although the last time we spoke about the pet shoot, when I said that I was using my my tripods to support the lighting, this time I'd actually, on this night before, I'd bought two light stands. Very lightweight, small ones. One goes up to about 3 meters, I think, and one goes up to 4. So I've got a little bit of flexibility, but I really didn't want to be working with the tripod with the legs out. I knew that there wasn't going to be enough room for that. In front of this table, between the table with the black cloth on, there was, I was sitting there, but then there was another table right behind that. So there really was no room, and I needed the height as well. So that I could sort of drop the light down from the top. So I figured, you know, professional shoot. I'm sort of demanding, professional money for this stuff. So I was just going to splash out for a few light stands. And they're literally, I think they were like $160 for the two. One was I think it was like $8,000 or $9,000. The other one was $6,000 or $7,000. 9,000. So that's 9,000 yen. I just switched into yen. But basically, so like $800 or $900. Nope, I'll say it all again. $80 or $90 for one, and $60 or $70 for the other. Okay, don't you just love this ad lib podcasting stuff? I can't even talk now. So I'm going to just move on. Let's take a look at another image, the next one in the series. So basically, I'd got the actual art of, you know, the act of doing the craft. And I went back now to getting some still lifes, and the first of which, or the next of which, if we include that first one with the pots as the first still life, is image number 1905. So here again, what I've done is just grabbed some of these beautiful sort of treasures that they have in the office here in the workshop, and just started to lay them out. A little bit of a story about that design there. I asked Maruyama-san if he had any papers, anything where he'd got like pictures or designs of the sort of patterns that they will put onto these Makie art objects, artifacts. And he brought out this piece of paper that we can see here. But I said, oh, this would be amazing if it had some of the kanji characters, you know, the Chinese characters that the Japanese loaned and made their own a few centuries or a few thousand years ago. And so what he did was he said, okay, and he did a photocopy of the original design, and then he just got out a brush and did the calligraphy that we can see, that like the name of the flowers that we can see there above to the right next to that palette, and then another one in the middle there just below the paperweight. And I just thought it was really nice. He was so cooperative and really tried to make the shoot as successful as he could. So what I was doing, though, I was grabbing these things from around the room and put the white paper down there as a start. And then I just sort of, you know, brushes, the palette on there, some of the little sachets. These are of the glitter. And we've got the paper there that we saw earlier with the little tube that they put the glitter into, the spatula, the paperweights. And then this just like a treasure trove, the drawer that has, various sort of envelopes of glitter and stuff. And those pots in the back there, that's lacquer, various colors of the lacquer. They put paper, I think it's like a wax paper over the top to stop it from totally drying up. It oxidizes pretty quickly, but if you put something over there so it can't breathe, it stays pretty much the same for a while. It does get denser, apparently, and they call it vintage lacquer, things that like over 10, 20 years, some of them. And so it can become quite a vintage commodity, but I just thought it was just amazing, all of these things, and the writing on the envelopes, all very sort of traditional Japanese. And again, I felt privileged to be sort of working with these things. But this, the way we dropped them down there, all totally sort of ad hoc, and just sort of put the tools out there and did a few shots from various angles. This one, just scroll down again and look at my EXIF data, shot with the 24 to 70 millimeter again. This time I'd closed down the aperture to f8, with a shutter speed of 125th of a second. And obviously, for this, I was trying to get a little bit more depth of field. I'd stepped back a little bit, so f8 was going to give me a pretty sharp image from front to back. But you know, hedging my bets, and I'd shot most of these images in a variety of depth of field. So I'd probably open right up to f2.8 and then close down to 11 for a number of them. And just sort of selected the best for the book at the end of, or at least to show the client after I'd got back. But here the F8 worked just about right for this one, I thought. Basically you can see if we look, we can also see that the black, especially above the where the black above the object, has got that slight warm feeling to it there. A little bit of reflection on the bottom part. But you can also see, if you look at the left, the very bottom left corner, you can also see there a spot of warm sort of orangey light. And that, again, is the umbrella shining in there and just warming up that black, which was one of the requirements for the shoot. So very glad that I bought that amber filter paper. Let me just go back. Oops, Firefox didn't like my little gesture there to go back. So next photograph. The same setting. Image number 1907 What I'd done here is basically moved the box out of the way, the drawer, and this time I'd taken a low angle and just sort of gone in very shallow depth of field. Let me just tell you what it is. This is pretty cool, actually. Look at this. I have got a relatively shallow depth of field, but I shot this at f16. So you can tell that what I was doing here, I was using a macro lens. I was back with the 100mm macro lens, and I was looking in at an angle, and so because I was very close this time to the object, even with f16, it's given me a very shallow depth of field. The palette in the background, the thumb palette is out of focus, but I've sort of got this line of focus across the gold, almost to the front of that sprinkler tube thing, but I've got the paperweight and a good band of the design there in focus, and so this is an effect that I was happy with, but it does just illustrate how getting closer to your subject, reduces the depth of field. So even at f16, we've got a relatively shallow depth of field here. I cropped this one slightly. I'd got a little bit of black where the edge of the paper crept into the bottom right-hand corner. And although I can, with 100% field of view in the 1DS, it didn't really bother me at the time. And I was shooting on a tripod for these. So it's not as though I didn't see it, but it kind of bothered me more when I looked at it afterwards. So I cropped the bottom of the image slightly. This is pretty much as shot apart from that. Let's move on. So the last image that I wanted to look at from this series. The number. So it's number 1909. So one of the other requests from the client was a nice close-up graphic shot. And they'd used or showed me a photograph similar to what they wanted, where the pen nibs for a certain type of pen had been sort of lined up on a tray. They're probably actually, it's what the tray that they probably come in. So I was asking if we had any sort of beads or anything like that, just to try and sort of emulate the style. And basically, Mariamson bought a few of these like studs, and we sort of dropped them onto this tray. And basically, what these are is if they make a little sort of a hole or a dent in the surface of the object that's going to have the Macchia artwork applied to it. These studs basically go pressed down into that, and then they stick up slightly so that there's some texture there. Probably ends up something similar to Braille writing, I would imagine. But the little bumps, these are the studs that make those. And we just sort of dropped them onto a lacquer tray. And then I got two of these almost antique-looking pots of lacquer, really old vintage lacquer. Again, not clean them up. There's lots of dust and dirt on there. But what I did here was I did a bit of artistic paralleling of the graphic focal points of these objects. So what I wanted to do was to line up the studs with the orange writing on the top of the pots. So as you look at this, you'll notice that I've angled the lens and everything so that the studs are in focus, but then also the two bright orange sets of characters on the top of both pots are also in focus. And so that gives us a nice sort of slice of focus, but then the tops of the pots, to the very top, goes out of focus pretty quickly. Let me just check. I think I shot this at f4. Shot at f4. At this distance, it's really got a very shallow depth of field. Again, I shot a few others. I've got a 2.8 and an f5.6 of this. The 2.8 works really well as well. But as you change the aperture, because the strobes are working more or less to sort of to give you the amount of light you want, it affected the way the pot was reflecting. The pot to the right there was reflecting in the lacquer tray, and the reflection was the nicest in this version. And I'd still got a nice shallow depth of field, so I went with this. But really, you know, the way the focus drops off at the towards the top of the pots, I really like. But then these three main graphic elements, the orange writing on the top of the two things, and then the studs, and then that shadow and everything, it all just really works very well for me. And so, you know, this was the last image that I'm going to share with you today. But I just wanted to sort of end on, you know, on a note about the whole thing again. You know, really enjoyed it. It was, I totally underpriced myself for this one. I got a good pay packet for it, so I'm not at all worried. But I was told that we would have 3 hours with the gentleman, and I was actually in his workshop for 7 hours doing all of these things, just setting everything up, and then you know, working with him, and then he had people come to visit him. He was actually going to be leaving the following day to go and do an exhibition of his artwork in Spain. So, you know, I felt really bad that we sort of intruded on him on the day before an international flight. But he was just so sort of sweet and nice and everything, you know, very cooperative. And we even actually, as soon as we'd finished all of the all of the work, I got everything packed away. I'd really disrupted them all day, really. From 1 o'clock, but it was what was it? I think it was 12:40 when I turned up, and it was about 7:30 just after when we finished. And so it was literally a good full 7 hours. And once we'd finished and got all of the things packed away, his wife came in with a bunch of lunchbox things. So they'd actually bought and fed us before I left. So it was a little bit another great experience with a wonderful person, a few wonderful people. So again, privileged to be working with these people. And again, you know, really sort of learning a lot, thinking on my feet about this lighting stuff. I'd not really done a lot of studio lighting until a few months ago. And so really sort of thinking on my feet, learning how to make the best of the equipment that I have, and how to sort of to model the light. And it's actually, although it's miles away from the normal sort of wildlife and nature shooting that I love so much, it brings its own challenges, and the results are nice, and it's got that Japanese theme, you know, the country that I love. So it's all really nice work to be doing, and like I say, learning a lot. So before I ramble on too much about all of that, I hope you've enjoyed sort of a little virtual tour through this, through the shoot. I really enjoyed doing it. And again, sorry about the, you know, every time I do these ad lib podcasts or episodes, usually people write to me and say that it's, you know, it's good, you should do more. So I'm not going to, I just did, but I'll try not to apologize for the ad lib, but I will apologize for not being quite as organized as I usually would be. So, you know, thanks for sticking with me anyway, and we'll wrap it up there. And I'll just, you know, maybe a few things to say in a moment in the ending notes. So a quick reminder before we do finish that the Shadows assignment, we've got a few days left of voting. If you haven't done so already, I do suggest that you take a look go over to the mbpgalleries.com website and take a look at the assignment gallery for the Shadows assignment. If you'd like to vote, it would be great if you could. If you're already a member, then just the voting buttons will be there. If you're not a member yet, I think if I recall, you could see the buttons, but then you'll be asked to register when you try to actually vote. Takes a moment. Of course, it's free, and you know. So I'd appreciate it if you did vote. But even if you don't have time to vote, I do suggest that you take a moment to to take a look at the gallery. It's excellent. You know, everybody's excelled themselves again, as usual, for the Shadows assignment. You'll be able to vote until the end of Sunday the 21st, next Sunday. I think it's the 16th today, or maybe the 17th, I forget. Losing track of time. It's Wednesday anyway, the Wednesday before the 26th, sorry, the 21st of September. So, you know, that's it for today. I would like to quickly say a big thanks to many. We've had a lot of people, new listeners that have come by and found us recently. I want to say a big welcome to all of you people, and thank you for sort of subscribing and for listening and for dropping me a line to let me know that you're enjoying the podcast. And you know, also if you're an old time listener, thanks to you guys too for sticking with me. And if any of you can think of any friends or family or anybody, you know, that is interested in photography, I'd really appreciate it if you could sort of send them a link to the podcast, or you know, there's actually a link that you can use to sign up in iTunes on the top of the podcast's page at martinbaileyphotography.com. And also, I think you can now mail a link to the podcast from iTunes. But if you can think of anybody that might be interested, then you know, it's always good to see more people coming on board. And also, you know, that kind of feeds people into the forum as well. We've got a great community over at the forum. So, you know, if you haven't got involved there, I suggest you do as well, just because it's just a great community, no flaming and stuff like that. And you know, it's really a nice place to hang out and talk about photography or just sort of anything, you know, really, as long as we stay, professional and civil. But everybody's been good at doing that for the last few years, and so I think you could safely ask your grandmother to come and join as well, and she wouldn't be offended by anybody. But of course, you know, anybody is welcome, and so I'd really appreciate it if you could drop a line to a few people that you think might want to be involved. So let's wrap it up for today, and we'll speak again next week. So whatever you're doing for the rest of this week, you have a good time doing it, and I'll see you later. Bye-bye.
Photocastnetwork.com, your photography resource in the podosphere. Photocastnetwork.com.